Increasingly more of the Republican establishment is coming to accept that the party's all but certain nominee. Meanwhile, Democrats are continuing to fight, even though that party's nomination appears to be locked up as well. And voters in the Philippines elect a tough-talking populist who could shake up the strategic alignment in the South China Sea. Those are just some of the stories on the mind of news analyst Neil Conan this week. And he joins us now, as he does most Tuesdays, from his Macnut Farm on the Big Island. Good morning, Neil.
Good morning, Beth Ann.
So let's start with the Democrats this week. Now, primaries continue in both parties. Of course, there's just one candidate left on the Republican side. Democrats vote today in Oregon and Kentucky. And Bernie Sanders is expected to clean up pretty well in Oregon, but it looks like a different kind of contest in Kentucky.
It does. One small correction. All but a handful of votes have already been cast in Oregon.
True.
Elections there are conducted by mail. There is one strange poll there that shows Clinton up by 15 points, but nobody believes it. On demographics, Oregon looks good for Senator Sanders, with fewer of the African Americans and Latinos have been such a big part of Secretary Clinton's base, and it's an open primary, so that allows in the independents who have largely supported Sanders.
In Kentucky, they have the old-fashioned voting booths, right? And people are just lining up to vote?
Absolutely. And you're also right that this one looks closer. At least we think so, because that's what the campaigns tell us. There's no opinion polls in Kentucky. Unlike Indiana and West Virginia earlier this month, and for that matter in Oregon, Secretary Clinton decided to compete in Kentucky. Her campaign spent heavily on TV there. Some say wasting valuable resources better spent against Donald Trump and the Republicans. But while she does not need a win in Kentucky, it's her best chance at a win this whole month. It's a closed primary, Democrats only. She's worked very hard there, especially the last few days, while Senator Sanders moved on to Puerto Rico and California.
Bernie Sanders says that he's going to be in it to win it, although the arithmetic clearly argues that's really not possible. Is he beginning to prepare his supporters for what looks like the inevitable?
No, I don't think so. And if you listen to the Sanders supporters on social media, the one state they are focused on this week is not Kentucky or Oregon. It's not even California. It's Nevada.
Hang on a second. Wait. Nevada, didn't they vote months ago? I mean, Clinton won that caucus back in February, yes?
That's absolutely right. But the statewide convention to select delegates to the national convention was held this past weekend. Enthusiastic Sanders supporters hoped they could pick up a delegate or two, or at least pack the delegation with Bernie boosters who might have to vote for Clinton on the presidential ballot but could support Sanders' initiatives on, you know, things like rules and procedures. A big block of Sanders people was ruled ineligible. And then it got ugly in Las Vegas. Absolute fury from some Sanders supporters and what they say, you know, is a system that's not only rigged against them, but that they were being treated with disrespect by people they call Clinton thugs. And people started throwing things to the hall. It all went online as well, of course. And the chair of the Nevada Democratic primary party got death threats by text. Her children were threatened. The convention was shut down before things got even further out of hand. And if that's what it's going to look like at the National Convention in Philadelphia, it could be a debacle.
No kidding. Now, not so long ago, though, remember, it was the Republican convention that people were worrying about. I mean, Trump threatening that if he didn't get his way. But, you know, that fight is kind of over, even if a lot of prominent party leaders kind of won't be there either.
Can you imagine a national convention without the last, the only two living Republican presidents and without the two presidential candidates who followed them? The most recent of those, Mitt Romney, continues to agitate for a conservative alternative to a candidate he calls unqualified to be president. But the Never Trump movement is all but dead, and much of Washington and the party leadership has edged towards Donald Trump, however grudgingly.
Now, last week, Trump went to Washington for that very much anticipated meeting with the Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan. He came away not very much with an endorsement, at least not yet, but with a statement that sort of emphasized common ground. I mean, how good is that?
Well, you could practically hear Paul Ryan's teeth grinding. He disagrees with Trump on major policy issues, and maybe you could get past that for the sake of party unity, but I put him among those Republicans, like his running mate Mitt Romney, like both Presidents Bush, who deeply dislike Trump's crass manner, his bigotry, his threats to resort to violence, his inability to control his impulses. And these Republicans, not just Paul Ryan, but he's the most prominent, these Republicans have to be panicking that if they do manage to bring themselves to shake his hand and endorse him, that after that he's going to do something or some series of things that will deeply embarrass them and the Republican Party.
Okay, I got two words for you. John Miller.
That's right. That's the laughing stock of the week. Donald Trump calling reporters pretending to be a Trump spokesman named John Miller as a way to boast about himself. This was some years ago, though, you know, apparently long enough ago that Trump forgot that he'd admitted it.
I want to move on to another election, the one in the Philippines. Now, Rodrigo Duterte is the president-elect, and few have been able to resist the comparison to Donald Trump.
And most add immediately after that, Donald Trump on steroids. This is the long-running mayor of the southern city of Davao. He ran a populist campaign against what he called a rigged system. He made extremely crude jokes about women, even a rape joke. In his time as mayor, he endorsed rough justice against criminals. Hundreds of alleged gangsters were killed by police and vigilantes. He vowed that as president, he would fill Manila Bay with the corpses of criminals. He declared that he would suspend Congress and impose martial law if legislators refused to enact his program. And when asked, he did not shy away from the word dictator.
Are things in the Philippines, you know, really that bad, though? I mean, I thought this was supposed to be an economic success story.
On some levels, it has been. There's been 6.5% annual economic growth under President Aquino, and that is remarkable, especially in the Philippines, which has been very, you know, sort of described as the sick man of Asia in recent years. But that growth has not filtered down to, let's use the American terminology here, down to the 99%. Times are still very tough for most people. Crime is a major problem. Corruption is a major problem. And as we saw in this election, you know, complacency among the ruling elites, the top families that have sort of swapped the presidency back and forth since the restoration of democracy 30 years ago, well, that's a problem too.
Okay, but in terms of U.S. policy, you know, the Philippines is important as maybe the most outspoken of the countries opposing China's expansion, say, in the South China Sea.
Yeah, and in the Philippine context, that's the West Philippine Sea, if you please. In recent years, China pushed Filipino fishermen out of some of their traditional fishing grounds. It seized territory the Philippines regards as its national territory. And that sort of pushed the Philippines back into a military alliance with the United States. And the Philippines agreed to let its former colonial power come back in and use Philippine bases.
So how does the president-elect see all that?
Early days yet, but, you know, nationalist might be the word that fits the bill. He objects to Chinese aggression, but he may object even more to a wider American role in the Philippines. On this, Duterte calls himself a socialist, deeply skeptical of the United States. He's spoken about accommodating China, making a deal to go along with Chinese ambitions in the South China Sea in return for Chinese investment, which is clearly an opening for Beijing. We're going to have to see if they can take advantage of it.
All right, we got to leave it there. And as it happens, I'm going to be away next week, and so are you. So we will reconvene on the 31st. Deal?
Talk to you again in a couple of weeks, Beth Ann.
Thanks, Neil. And Neil Conan is our news analyst who joins us most Tuesdays from the farm. You can also hear his Pacific News Minutes right here on Hawaii Public Radio. It's now 8:47.